Welcome to the show that has it all. This is the Betfred Super League.
What a game!
Champions, challengers, newcomers, league's faithful. Hold on tight. This is the Betfred Super League 2024. There's nothing like league. Yeah.
Took a big chunk.
Bleeding. It's bleeding.
Oh no, it's bleeding. The thing just ripped my ear off. What do you think?
Welcome to this latest edition of Eddie and Steve-O, the podcast, proudly here with the support of Rugby League's major sponsors, Betfred. Now then, this is another special half hour or so in the series of interviews with some of the biggest names in the game. But apologies that this time, for some reason, the sound quality leaves a little to be desired. However, I trust that that won't detract too much from another one-on-one with a former superstar of the game. Enjoy.
This week, I'm delighted to be joined by former Wigan, Warrington, Huddersfield, Widnes, Lee, and Salford legend, now a leading TV pundit, Kevin Brown. Kevin recently arrived back from a very special rugby tour to the south of France, not with any of the game's current stars, but maybe with a host of stars of the future. Kev, thanks very much for joining me, and let's first of all talk about this tour that you've just come back from, and you survived it.
Yeah, survived it with a lot of headaches, but it was worth every one. I think getting back, I've slept for about 2 or 3 days just to get back on top. But no, it's been a trip that we have been planning for a number of years. Since COVID, we thought it was really important to give the young lads something, and girls. We've had a great time. We've raised a lot of money for this trip. And it was even better than we thought. The level and the French were really, really good. Catalans were sensational in the way that they looked after us as well. And the kids have got memories for life. And I'm sure if you ask them, they've all said, some of them have never been on a plane and some of them have been all over, but they've all said to a man that were the best holiday they've been on. So everything we did was worthwhile.
And let me, tell everybody, and it's worth telling, that you had a testimonial year and you put a lot of money on one side to make sure that this trip happened, because it was with Oral St James, which is a club very close to your heart, because your son plays there, doesn't he?
He does, but we thought it was important that everyone had the opportunity to go, and there is a lot of, a lot of struggles now with the crisis and cost of living. So we said if we're going to take one, the only reason that they don't come is because they've got something else on, or they don't want to, it's not because of finances. So there were 33 children that we paid for and took. I've put my testimonial money into it. Then we walked from Leeds to Wigan, which took 48 hours. We walked for 3 hours, rested for two, and we did that for 48 hours, which sounded easy at the time, but it was the most difficult challenge I've done, and I've swam the channel since. So let me tell you, that was tough. I lost all my toenails. And then we needed to raise a little bit more money, so we swam Windermere, me and a couple of the parents, and we raised some money for that. But like I say, it was really difficult, but it was more than worth it. Do it all again. Just to see their enjoyment on the faces, they all had fun. We took two teams within the same age group, a development side and a side that lads have been playing rugby since 4 and 5. But they all got something out of it and got memories for life. And I think a lot of the parents enjoyed it. A lot of them can't remember most
of it. I was going to say.
They had a real good time as well. So, no, it was a fantastic trip. Very well organised. And I would say that if anyone's thinking about doing it, it's definitely something I'd recommend.
This is like an Easter programme that the Catalans and people in the south of France organise. It's a festival of rugby. How did you all get on? I mean, okay, I know you had a great time off the field. What about on the field? How did it perform?
On the field, the both teams performed great, and we went there with obviously everyone. When you tell kids it's not about winning, they look at you like you've got three heads, and to them it's the World Cup final. So we play to win. The Blues, that we call our development side, won all games and won the tournament, which
brilliant.
Was absolutely sensational, because they've been doing it tough this year. They've moved up a league, so they got to sing the song and lift the trophy on the stage, and just, yeah, absolutely sensational. The Golds played in a year above. And they won all. They won the group, so they went into the final group, and they got beat by Liam Watts' son's team, Casford Lotley, in the year above. So, but again, it was just, even though they didn't win the competition, they felt like winners because everyone got on. All the French teams were really, really accommodating. And then, and off the back of that, now there's some French teams. Pierre are coming over to Oral, and they're going to come and watch Saints and Wigan at Wigan. I think in a couple of months' time.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, you're someone who played the game to a great level, England international, etc., so forth, all these clubs that you play for as well. But you want to put something back into the game, obviously, which is heartening to know. What would you say to ex-players? Do the same, have a go, help the young kids out?
Well, I didn't realise when I was playing how much reliance was on volunteers. When you're playing as a kid, you think everyone's there and that's their job. And that was me just completely blind to how much work, and my parents as well, and how much they did. And when you get a bit older, and just the opportunities it's given me, the life it's given me, I want to give the same opportunity. And not everyone can play professional rugby league, but I've got loads and loads of friends who still came on that journey to their level, and the friends they've made from it, the memories they've made from it, and that's what I'm trying to replicate. And at the same time, I'm not going to lie, selfishly, I'm still loving this, helping out and being on the journey with a group of lads who, they're all like sponges. They look at you, and everything you tell them, they think is brilliant, it's a joy for me, not only for the players. So, any player or anyone who's been involved, and I think the majority do, they like to give back. And we realise how good we've had it. I think sometimes players can be a little bit bitter against the game and stuff, but for me, it's, you know, I knew what I was getting involved with rugby, and we spoke of it before. You are a piece of meat, but that's professional sport. And as long as you know that and you're playing well, well, you can still have a great time. But the good things about the rugby and the sport completely outweigh the negatives, even the injuries and the lack of form and the rejection and all that. That makes you stronger. But the fun times and the mates you make and the banter you have along the way is what it's all about.
Absolutely it is. I mean, you had a glorious career. Let's talk about that right now. I've read a couple of biographies about you on social media. I apologise for that. But one says you're born in St. Helens and one says you were born in Wigan. Now, everyone associates you with Wigan.
Yeah, well, I moved to Wigan when I was 14. I signed for the club at 15, and then I'm 40 this year, and I've been there ever since. All my family are from Wigan, but I actually lived in Newton Lee Willows when I was growing up, so not a lot of people know that one. So I was actually growing up in Warrington in Newton, and then I moved to Haydock with my parents from about 9 to 15. So I'm a bit of a mongrel, Eddie. I have been all over, but I would class Wigan as my town now. I've been there that long. All my wife's side are pure Wiganers. And I was born in Billings, so it's right on the border anyway. So, yeah, I've always supported Wigan. And I class myself as a Wiganer now.
And yet you could have signed for St. Helens, couldn't you? Mike Rush was desperate to get you there, wasn't he?
I nearly signed for St. Helens a couple of times. I nearly signed when I was 15. Mike was the coach of the town team at the time, and I was offered a contract. It was Eric Hughes who offered me the contract, and I obviously signed for Wigan, and then I made my debut for Wigan, and Ian Millwood tried to sign me back at the at Saints, and turn them down again because I love playing for Wigan. And then when I was at Widnes, I sat down with Eamon McManus, and he offered the club a transfer fee, and Widnes wanted more, and then ultimately Warrington paid that fee, and I ended up there. And Eamon, I carried the trophy out to Old Trafford as a retirement sort of present from the RFL, and Eamon said to me, if you'd have come to us, you wouldn't have had to carry it like this. You'd have carried a few. So it was, and I said, well, if you'd have paid a little bit more, I wanted to come. So we had a bit of a laugh. But yeah, just, it was one club that I got the chance to, and I would have liked to have played for Saints because I love the style that they've played. And
they were the entertainers, and I always, you know, was envious of how they did play the game. So yeah, but I had a great career. I loved my time at all the clubs, and we had quite a successful period at some stages in every club I went to. So no, I'm really content with the career I had, Eddie. But Saints was one that got away because I did have an opportunity. Probably three times, genuine times, and for whatever reason, it just wasn't the right time.
Well, you made your debut against them, didn't you, in a Good Friday match for Wigan that Wigan should never, ever have won, but you did, you won it. And in those days, Sky were giving away Tissot Man of the Match awards, a watch. And you got the Steve-O Man of the Match award. He bought you a watch. Now, that's unusual in itself that he actually gets his wallet out. You realise that?
Well, I know that, and I've had some stick, and the watch is still going. It's on my dad's wrist at the minute, and he always tells the story that Steve-O bought it because my son was, he looked like a 13-year-old paper buyer. I think that's one of Steve-O's comments. He doesn't look much, but he can play. But no, we joke about that game now, and I think if we'd have played 100 times, that was one game we would have won, and the other 99 Saints would have won. The quality that they had. We had a lot of young players, and even our old players were rubbish. We had Terry O'Connor, who was our senior player. So when you look around the change rooms, I think, Tez will look after us, and then we... No, I'm only joking. We had a lot of... But the young lads that made the debut was probably the second choice young lads as well, because there weren't just injuries to the first team. There was a lot of injuries in the reserves. So I was literally, I went from playing academy and playing with my mates and watching the games to a couple of weeks after just being absolutely ambushed and playing in one of the biggest games in the calendar with a sold out 25,000 at the JJB it was at the time, was just something that I couldn't have dreamt of. And to get the win, I still think it was probably my best and most enjoyable game out of the 450 I played.
I think on that day I said, look at the face on the young kids and even the old boilers like Terry O'Connor, they're enjoying this as well. And O'Connor has told me very, very unfairly that when he got back to the dressing room, said, well, this kid Brown will never play for us again, and look at the career
well,
he got.
The thing is, he probably told me to my face as well. I remember Terry O'Connor and Terry Newton, actually, they were winding me up on the day of the game. I don't know whether they were doing it to sort of ease my nerves or not, but when I turned up to my peg, there was toilet roll all around my peg, and then it was Terry O'Connor said, you can have a massage as well if you want, Kev. I was like, really? I'm not that stiff. And he was like, no, it's to loosen your muscles off and that. And so one of the first lessons I got was never to trust Terry O'Connor or Terry Newton. And so Terry O'Connor told me to go, and I got on the massage bed, and then it was his partner in crime, Terry Newton, came with some Ryljacks and put it on my backside, and after that I've never been able to lie down on a massage bed again. So they were winding me up, they're saying it to take my mind off the game, but it definitely did that.
I bet it did. And that's typical O'Connor, by the way. And I know that Terry Newton in his day, God love him, was a really, you know, a great joker as well. But you know, what was it, 422 career games, 159 tries. He's always been a good judge, hasn't he, of a player, Terry O'Connor?
Eh? I think that's why he's had such a good career in TV, because he's always known what he's on about. But he, joke aside, Tez was great, and so were all the senior players. Not a lot of them played in the debut game, but the likes of Andy Farrell, Adrian Lamb, Tez, Dennis, so many unbelievable pros. They showed me how to do it the right way. They showed me how to train hard and work hard, and regardless of talent, it was all about culture and team first. And the lessons I learned with that brief spell, probably for 18 months, 2 years, with all them superstars of the game, really helped me for the rest of my career.
I bet it did. And what a career you had. As I say, you went to all these clubs. If you had, obviously Wigan, huge, huge part of your life. If you had your time over again, or if you look back now, which was the happiest times that you had? Because you were brilliant at Huddersfield. You did your trade for Widnes. You did your trade for Salford. You know, I'm just wondering which was the best.
Consistently, probably Widnes. Look, at Warrington, you know, we played in three cup finals. We beat Brisbane, but we underachieved. Let's not beat around the bush. We underachieved with the squad we had. With Wigan, it was a turmoil time. It was, you know, I think I had six coaches in 3 years.
Oh, wow.
It was just a revolving door of coaches. So that was great but difficult. And Huddersfield was sensational. I learned how to play the game under Nathan Brown. I captained the club. We played in cup finals. And it was a time in Huddersfield sort of period that we were really successful. But Widnes for me was something that we transformed, a side that had just come up and they were getting battered. I sat with Dennis and he said, I want to bring you and Danny Tickle in to really show the rest of the group how to, and pass that knowledge on that we'd learned from the Wigan lads, like I just mentioned, and show them what working hard really looks like and what being part of a good team, and regardless of, you know, what people think externally, internally, we can do something special. And we did, and we punched above our weight massively. We played in semi-finals. We were regulars in the playoffs, and that was a great time. And when you talk about salary cap spend, I remember sitting down with James Rule and Dennis, and we were the bottom spenders, but punching above our weight. So for me, as the captain of that club at the time, to drag them up was brilliant. And I still have lots of great friends at Widnes, and it actually does break me out how the club is at the minute, that where the state of the club is. And I hope it can get back to something like. And I took a lot of stick when I left for Warrington, and people didn't realise at the time why I had to leave and the money that was needed to plug a gap to keep the club afloat for a little bit longer, and ultimately it went into administration. But I got sold for £250,000, and I can say that now because I had an NDA on me that I couldn't tell anyone, and I was getting the stick thinking I'd just walked out. But the club needed the money to balance the books. They asked me to leave, and they said that Warrington was the club for me. And if a club saying that they wanted me to leave, and a club like Warrington, who I thought had a great opportunity to win things, you know, I was all behind it.
I bet you were. And you're right. I mean, you say it breaks your heart to see Widnes where they are now. It breaks everyone's heart to see where Bradford are as well. I mean, it just shows you the ups and downs of this game. You know, you can be a hero one minute, you can be zero the next.
Yeah, and that's what I tell, you know, all the players coming through now. Don't get carried away, because if you're not where you want to be, it doesn't mean it's the end of the road. And I'll show you 100 players who have gone round a different way, and it doesn't mean you can't be the best. You look at Sean Long and people now like Tyler Dupree, who got shipped out and went to Oldham, and then he's come back and he's won everything at Wigan. He's an international. And Long, he did the same. He had to go to Widnes. So everyone has a different journey, and the club's the same. I think if everyone wants to strive for that, like, next step, but if you spend above your means, and that's just a great lesson in life and something I got taught early on, if you're spending more than you're bringing in, then there's a car crash waiting to happen. I think that's what's happened at a few clubs. But I think rugby league in general now is quite healthy, the amount of ownership that's come in. You know, everyone speaks about the game as a bit negative. I think it's sort of trendy to do in our sport, but I genuinely believe that clubs are managing much better than other sports. I think if you look at rugby union, the amount of debt that's in that game to the debt that's
and
in
the
rugby
number
league,
of clubs that have gone bust in rugby.
Well,
union.
Yeah, and that's just the natural evolution of, if you're in a load of debt, at some point you're going to go bust. And so for me, I think rugby league is a sport that is about to, and I just really hope it does. I really hope it takes off, you know, again, and really kicks on, because I love everything about the sport. I love everything about the memories it's given me. Even not the professional sport, I love the grassroots. Probably more so now, I love the grassroots more than the professional game, just because it is an absolute joy. Everyone is there for fun, from open age to the juniors. I see how hard everyone, all the volunteers, work, and they're doing it because they love the game, and the game is so good.
And you have an inside knowledge of that, because people might not realise you are a player's agent, but not a player's agent who's got percentage signs in his eyes. You want to, as you just said, make sure the youngsters who come into the game now know it's not going to last until you're 70. There's a certain cut-off point, and you've got to make sure your future is good.
Yeah, and my one line to a lot of the players is, you know, you need something alongside your rugby. You're not a rugby player. That isn't who you are. You play rugby, and it's great to be focused and disciplined and really committed. That is essential. But at the same time, you need to do something else, whether that is education, whether that's business or property. You need to start thinking about something when you're playing to give you that same purpose and give you that same financial backing so you can support yourself and your family when you finish. Because if you just start thinking about it when you finish, the mortgages still needs to be paid, the cars need to be paid, the kids need to be fed, and it's really hard to get educated and get the finances in when you finish. And that's what I try and get over to all the players. And a lot of the time it's through bad examples. I will tell them bad examples, and sometimes I'll even name people in my own family who have gone about it the wrong way, and now they're in a bit of a pickle. So it's really, really important that the kids, the next generation, love the sport, but at the same time have an understanding that they're not going to be multi-millionaires where they never have to lift a finger again.
And they should listen to you, because, as I say, you are their agent in very many ways. You're a businessman. You're a TV pundit now as well. You've got bits and pieces of property yourself. So you are the living example of what you say works.
Yeah, and I had a good career, Eddie, and I earned good money, but I was never a marquee player. I was never, on the money that I could sit back and just relax. I was always thinking what's next, and looking at bad examples. It really was, this is not how I want my life to go. And it gave me the luxury of choosing the career I wanted after rugby, and the property business I got, and the the hospitality business I got, just give me that luxury of going, well, I do like coaching, but I'm going to do it for fun. I actually spoke to Chris Radlinski about coaching at Wigan, but at the time it just didn't feel right. And I thought, I want to try and do something that agents have done for me and set them up, because that's a lasting effect that it's had on me, rather than, coaching again and putting my wife through it again and not having my weekends. We had a sit down and said, look, you've done that at Agra for 20 years. Let's just take stock. Think about what you want to do rather than just jump into something. And I spoke to my agent at the time, Yestin, and he said he'd love to have me, doing this sort of role for the company. This is my third year and I'm absolutely loving it.
I bet you. And why wouldn't the young players listen to you? Your club career, you're England international as well. You played in a World Cup final, for goodness sake, Geez, we should have beaten them, shouldn't we? 6-0. 6-0, it couldn't be closer.
I actually had a coffee with Callum Watkins yesterday, and he got ankle tapped by an ankle tap that,
yes.
I still don't know how. I think it was Josh Dugan who got him. He was a real athletic man, and the way he got back there. But yeah, I spoke with Cameron Smith after the game, and he said it was the hardest game he's played. So for someone like that who's been in so many, wars in Origin and other countries, for him to say that was the hardest game, it does let you have a little bit of contentment at night. But winning a World Cup would have been something special. But yeah, I think just going back to the off-field stuff, I actually had a better back end in my career, I believe, because I was comfortable that my future was sorted. I was playing rugby again. It was almost like the kid coming out of me, because I was playing for fun. I wasn't desperate. Look, the money were great, and the money definitely helped, but it weren't everything. It wasn't, I need this next contract, I need, or I can't feed, I can't pay the bills. It was, I want to go and do something here, and I want to go and test myself. I want to, a chance of winning something. And I never did win anything, but I played in 4 Challenge Cups, Grand Final, World Cup Final. So I'm content, I'm happy. I give everything. I couldn't have left any more on the field. And I think the biggest regret I would have had is if I could have tried a little bit harder, I'd done a bit more. But I squeezed the juice out of my old body as much as I could, and I can sleep at night happy that I give everything.
Well, that's 100%. You're absolutely right. And you were so near and yet so far in all those major finals. And I know the fact that you lost 4 Challenge Cup finals with 4 different clubs, a record, is a record you could well and truly do without, isn't it?
It is. I'd swap it just for one.
Yeah.
And the last one probably hurt the most. The last one, for a couple of reasons, that I wanted my son, when he was a little bit older, to actually see me play at Wembley, and it was behind closed doors through COVID, and I genuinely thought we were the better team that day, and there was a penalty, in the 79th minute when we were drawing, and it gave...
It was for Salford, wasn't it?
For Salford, and we had the ball.
On earth were you doing there at Salford? For goodness sake, I mean, there is another string to your bow.
Yeah.
You've got a club like Salford, who haven't been there, I don't think, since David Watkins' days. They've never won the Challenge Cup. There you were, within touching distance.
Well, we were touching distance, and there was a couple of moments that do haunt me, and sometimes when I go to bed, I still shake my head. And Paulie played the ball. He had a great game, Paulie that day, and he played the ball incorrectly. And penalties when you've got the ball hurt you, but penalties when there's a minute left and the game's level and you don't play the ball, I just thought the referee killed us that day. And Luke Gale dropped the goal, and then we got one more opportunity, and I passed the ball out wide to Chris Inuru. He is a remarkable player, and the problem is he's that strong. He backed himself, but the opposite centre against him, and Chris Whelan was outside him, he could have walked him, but the opposite centre who he tried to run over was another bull in Conrad Earl at the time at Leeds, and he whacked him and we dropped the ball, and I knew that moment that my chances of winning the Challenge Cup were gone, and it was so close, we almost had the perfect game plan to win. Ian Watson was a terrific coach. We should have won the game, but I don't know whether it was just I jinxed the club, because I felt jinxed at times. I thought we were going to do it with Warrington when we played Catalan, and we didn't perform that day. We didn't. Wigan and Saints was just a good ride. It was in the Challenge Cup final at Cardiff. And then the Huddersfield one, I snapped my knee after 10 minutes. So I can live with them two.
Yeah, yeah.
The other two really are. The World Cup final, again, you know, it was a great memory. We could have won it, but we left everything on the field. The two that really hurt me are the grand final for Warrington against Wigan. We should have won that. I believe we just didn't capitalise on our opportunities. Wigan were better on the day, definitely. And the cup final against Leeds, that still stings, that one.
I bet it does. But you know, you say sometimes as you're going to sleep, you shake your head and think, oh my God, I should not be thinking about this. You had a fantastic, fantastic career, didn't you? No question. And it's made you what you are today, without blowing smoke. You know, it has.
It definitely has. And the prospects, and this is where I always, speak about rugby league, not only for the professional game, the prospects and the dreams it gave me, and where I grew up, it wasn't a nice place. It was, you know, it was council estates, and I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have the purpose when I was a young boy, when, you know, picking the rugby ball up at 7, 8, all the way through my teens, and just staying out of troubles, that didn't drink, because I had that goal of being a rugby player. And all my mates came on that journey with me, and a couple of us did it, but there was a lot who stayed out of trouble because they wanted that dream too, and they've turned into great family men, and they're doing their own thing now. And but the purpose and the drive and the dream came from picking that rugby ball up. And as soon as there was a bit of a time where we could get over the field, there was 40 of us all over playing rugby, and that's what it's all about. We're young lads, we've got energy, but if you have something that you want to channel it into. And that's why when I see, you know, lads suing the game, and I get that, you know, some will struggle, and it's really, really sad. And that's why I swam the channel, to raise money for that. I just don't think we want to be blaming the game for anything, because at the time, you don't know what you don't know, and the head concussion stuff is just an absolute, can of worms where it's been open. And I just hope it doesn't take away from that next generation.
Well, that's the trouble. And also, you mentioned the fact that you were with 40 of your mates playing on a field. You weren't on a mobile phone. I mean, the mobile phones have only come in the last 10 years. I understand that. But there was no mobile phone. There was no social media. Too many kids these days have got the phone in their hand 24/7.
Yeah, and that's where I think it completely outweighs the negatives. And there is a danger of playing rugby. It's a contact sport. There's a danger of playing football. There's a danger of getting up and going out on your bike. But there's a danger of sitting inside and being too comfortable, and the anxiety that'll bring you, the physical unhealthiness that'll bring you is huge too. And it's only when I've got older that I've realised a lot of the stuff is all about being active and having a balanced diet. You don't have to live like a monk. But you have to be active, you have to have some sort of purpose, some sort of fun. You know, I used to drive my mum mad. She used to give me my ball and say, go out and run it off and run some steel. And that's what I needed. I dread to think what it'd be like if I was cooped up in the house and playing on an Xbox or a PlayStation for 8, 9 hours a day. And how my behaviour would have been when I was a young one.
It's a great lesson for people who are listening to this, I'm sure. In these interviews, I asked 3 quick questions at the end. I mean, let's remember, you began your career thrown in on the wing, and then you gradually moved in to the middle. You've played centre, stand-off, full-back, scrum-half, loose forward. Where do you think you were best?
Stand-off.
Okay, so you're the best number six that you knew.
I did know that. Trent Barrett, I knew him, he was better than me.
Fair enough. Best player you played with?
Andy Farrell. Yeah. By a mile, by an absolute mile. I played with some terrific players, Sam Burgess, Jamie Peacock, Morley, James Graham, Adrian Lamb, Sean O'Loughlin, but Andy Farrell, what he could do on a field as a six, as a fullback, not a fullback, as a front rower, as a 13, and how he just had an influence on every game in the sheds and on the field, because I've not seen anything close to that.
And what a coach he's become now, and the other coach, sadly.
Sensational coach. I actually spent 10 days with him over in Dubai in the off-season, and picked his brain on it, because even though I don't coach, I'm really interested in how leadership and management, and he's just the ultimate leader. And he's found a way now. He's not as direct as he used to be with people like myself when I was coming through. He's not just shooting from the hip, he thinks about it, and everything's genuine and real organic when he speaks. So,
definitely.
No, he's a true world-class leader, coach and person.
Good. I noticed you didn't mention O'Connor in any of those players that you ever
respected. Well, is the one the worst?
It's all right. That goes without saying. Don't worry about that. Last question. Toughest opponent?
Toughest opponent. I played Sonny Bill Williams a few times. I played Sonny Bill when I was 16.
Wow.
Played for England under-16s versus New Zealand in Carlaw Park in New Zealand. And I played, James Graham played in that game as well. And Sonny Bill Williams, no one had heard of him. We thought we was the bee's knees, and we went over there and got pasted. And Tommy Lulu I played actually as well. And I remember James, we did the anthem, and then the hacker came. And at 16, it was a bit like they were big lads, but we'd seen big lads before. We'll send Jammer in, and Jammer got absolutely folded in half off Sonny Bill. And he was so difficult to play at that age. And then I played against him again for the proper test series over there, and then played him again when he played at Toronto. And just the skill he had, the size and the strength was exceptional. But Paul Sculthorpe as well, I always used to hate playing Scully, because it was like tackling a lamppost running at you. He was so strong but skillful too. He wouldn't run at you direct. He'd be putting footwork on and moving the ball. And I just found him a nightmare to play against. It was really difficult. So probably played against Scully a lot. And I'd probably say him for persistent tough games. But Sonny Bill, yeah, just an eye-opener. It was probably the first time in my life that I thought, I'm out my depth, what am I doing on this field, when he was knocking people's head back, and it was, right, it's your turn to get the ball now, Kevin. I'm thinking, oh, God. But, yeah, no, they played against some terrific players, but he was one. And then all the Australians as well, Cameron, Cooper Cronk and Thurston, playing against them, it's a different kind of toughness. Your brain's working overdrive, trying to keep up with her speed. But, yeah, in terms of physicality, Sonny Bill.
Kev, it's been fantastic talking to you. It really has. A great insight, not only into the game, into you as a person. Congratulations with all that you've done and all that you're going to do. Keep up the good work with the kids. I'm sure you will. And, you know, all power to your elbow. And we'll see you on the telly again very, very soon, all being well.
Yeah, hopefully. It's been my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Eddie.
It's great to see you, Kev. Thanks very much for spending so much time. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Eddie and Steve-O, the podcast. We'll be back, hopefully, same time next week.